Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
This is Conspiranormal.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to Conspiranormal.
Myself and Turfiel are here, and we've got one of our favorite guests on the line. Been on this show, I think this is probably like the 15th or 16th time.
I was thinking that, yeah. it's been a while.
But we've got Aaron Gullius. Aaron is a historian, written tons of books about conspiracy theories and about UFOs, and is also the host of the excellent Saucer Live podcast, which I am getting caught up again with. And we're going to do a little Patreon here later on about the Saucer Life and some of the stuff he's been talking about that. But tonight we're going to talk about his new book, Conspiracy and Triumph. And Surfiel and I have both read this, and it is an excellent book. And we're going to focus, I think, tonight not so much on the QAnon stuff, because we've talked so much about that. We might talk a little bit about it, but I really want to focus on the Nasara and the UFO disclosure stuff. But
you couldn't have avoided it, and you put it in really good context.
Right, right.
Yeah. Hopefully not jumping the gun, but one of the frustrating things about writing the book was that when I pitched it, QAnon was, gosh, it was, I mean, it was still on 4chan at that point. It was early days. Nobody knew about it. By the time I got around to writing the QAnon section, it was, I think I was working on it on January 6th last year. So,
wow. Oh my God.
I'm sitting there scrolling through, what was the one that went away? The social media site that got
Parler.
I was scrolling through Parler, yeah. And then Parler died. And then I was following, Lynn Wood on Telegram. And sort of screen capping stuff as quick as I could, and just getting more and more depressed.
Yeah, I saw all those references, and I was like, man, where's he getting all this stuff? Is he really doing the dirty work?
I was writing it as it was happening, and it took me months to finally delete Telegram off my phone, because I was just sort of compulsively seeing what Lynn Wood was saying every day, and it started to rot my brain. And so I had to get out of there.
I was trolling my neighbor a little bit on Parler, and I got to say, that was a dark place.
It really was. It's not quite 4chan dark, but, actually it was worse, because Parler, you had like the really deep, dark, nasty stuff.
And then someone's aunt, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say random boomers from the book, you know, who thought that it was finally the only place they could finally be free. Wild, ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, and we should point out here, Aaron, that you do all the dirty work that nobody else is willing to do by reading all this stuff, and not only in this field of like what we're going to talk about the book, but also these ridiculous alien contact e-books that you read as well. No one goes as deep as you do, so we don't have to. And we really appreciate that. It may have taken years off your life, but we appreciate you for it.
I'm absolutely certain it did. I'm aged beyond my years at this point. I'm 19 years old, guys, and you know it's just aged me incredibly.
Do you ever have to like put down the conspiracy stuff and go visit the Space Brothers for a little bit just to kind of even things out?
Yeah, I have to, and.
Until the Space Brothers start pulling out anti-Semitic tropes.
And yeah, you're the Space like, Brothers are Nazis too.
Absolutely. And I can't remember who I was telling the other day, but my new podcast I've started with my friend Samantha, Great Lakes Lore, which is more just weird history and more general paranormal stuff here in the region. It's just so refreshing to have no political stuff really, no flying saucers really until we do a flying saucer episode, but it's nice to have other outlets because this stuff, man, gets old,
and in all seriousness it gets pretty dark too.
It does.
So let's start out by talking about like what made you want to write this book in particular, how you got interested in this subject, and what the concept of a triumphalist conspiracy theory is.
Okay, so I guess the origins of it, this sounds really, really lame, but the origins of it were when I was in North Carolina a few years ago, I stopped in at my publisher, McFarland, for lunch, and they took me out to lunch, and they said, we'd love for you to write another conspiracy theory book. And I was like, no. And but they bought me beer and they bought me sandwiches. And I said, oh, okay, I will go think about how to do this and not have it just be more conspiracy theories. Like, you know, the previous conspiracy theory book, I didn't want to do like a, you know, here's all the ones I didn't cover.
Right.
So I went away and I thought about it for a few months. And then I was looking at some Nassara stuff because Nassara had always fascinated me. And I started noticing just, wow, Nassara, there's this overlap sometimes between Nassara and some of the UFO, some of the really, really fringe UFO disclosure people. So that's kind of interesting. And then I just realized one day that this is sort of the opposite ending to all these narratives. It's the opposite of the traditional, especially right-wing conspiracy theory of all of us right-thinking patriots are going to get, you know, trucked to the FEMA camp,
right?
You know, that's our ultimate fate. Instead, it's more of a, there's going to be a conspiracy rapture, and you know, the good guys are going to win, and the new millennium is going to come, and it's going to be an era of peace and prosperity for everybody but those of us who are on the right side of it, who are predicting it now, are going to be the ones who are basically able to say, I told you so. That's sort of like,
yeah.
Well, what's your reward when all of this happens? Well, everybody who shunned me will know I was right. Finally, my kids will talk to me again because they'll see I was right about Nassara wiping out all my credit card debt. You know, so it was sort of that idea that okay, there's these positive conspiracy theories out there. And then sort of started to break it down to, okay, we've got UFO disclosure and we've got Nassara. And then there's this QAnon thing happening. And that seems to have a lot of similarities in that it's this constant, well, it's coming. It's always just around the corner. And initially there was a fourth sort of equally sort of robust section on sovereign citizen movement and sovereign citizen legal theory. And in the end, I just legal theory in massive sarcasm quotes, because it also is, and in the end, it didn't really fit, because I couldn't really find a conspiracy theory out there other than, you know, the lawyers don't want you to know about this one trick, you know, that'll mm-hmm. know, make it so you don't need a driver's license or whatever. But the thing is, a lot of sovereign citizen ideas informed these other ones. So I had to deal with it. I had to sort of introduce the basic concepts, but, and that was one of the sort of really the only biggest structural problem I had with it was suddenly sovereign citizens aren't another chapter. So it was sort of, it came from all those areas, wanting to do a conspiracy theory book that wasn't about traditional conspiracy theories or didn't look at conspiracy theories in a completely traditional way. And it let me talk about some UFO stuff, and it let me talk about Sherry Schreiner a little bit. And I finally had a place to put information that was in my head from when I would commute and listen to the Prophecy Club radio show.
Oh no.
Because, oh man, those people. Wow. So it just sort of, you know, it's sort of like I had this idea about the sort of triumphalist conspiracy theories, but then also I had, like I said, all this stuff in my head. I had a bunch of Sherry Schreiner knowledge in my head. I had a bunch of Prophecy Club knowledge in my head. I had a bunch of sovereign citizen knowledge in my head. So it's like, it's really a way to sort of find an excuse to know that stuff. It's like, okay, I know this stuff. I got to do something with it, because otherwise I've really wasted my time. So if I can put this in the book somewhere, that would be good. But that's sort of the origins of it and sort of what I mean by triumphalist conspiracy theories.
Yeah. And opposed to the usual apocalypticism that you talked about that people associate with conspiracy theories, it seems like these triumphalist ones have, a lot more utility for motivating people and running cons, pretty much, because there's things to get out of it. It's not just all doom and gloom. You know, if you learn the secrets and pay whoever you've got to pay to learn the secrets, there's real benefits, perceived benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something in it for you rather than, hey, maybe if you join with us, you'll be one of the few, you know, fighting a guerrilla war against the New World Order in some forest somewhere. That doesn't sound great.
Right.
But if you're going to be one of the few who were smart enough to know what's going to happen, you can benefit from it in some way. Yeah.
And the sovereign citizen stuff, I mean, is it true that it's kind of waned? And is that really like a early 90s kind of thing when it hit its peak?
It hit a peak in the 90s, and then it sort of went away, and then the internet sort of brought about a resurgence, because you have a whole generation of people who didn't know about this stuff from back in the 80s and the 90s, because it sort of got its start in the 60s and 70s out west, and it's a weird sort of history that that involves, you know, the farm protests and the prairie fire movement out in the plains states. It's a radicalized version of basically the political movement that swept Republicans into office across the plains states and the west out into California. And so more modern sort of iterations of this, the thing with the Bundys out west, the Bundy thing, that's very much, you know, why can't we graze on public land, you know, without paying fees? You know, we've got these theories about things that's very much related to some of the earlier sovereign citizen stuff. And if you go on YouTube, there's lots of fun videos of people, you know, claiming that they are traveling, they are not driving, so they do not need a driver's license, because driving is commercial, and I'm not engaged in commercial business. And if I'm not engaged in commercial business, the government cannot regulate me in any way. Guides published in the last 10, 15 years for police officers and judges and prosecutors. Okay, this is how you deal with this. Because imagine you're you know, Fred, the prosecutor, who gets handed this case, and you've got a defendant who is defending himself or herself, and they do nothing but talk about gold fringed flags and refuse to acknowledge the authority of the court, and, you know, demand, you know, talk about how, you know, they did not receive a summons because the name on the summons was in capital letters, and that is not their name. That is a government-created straw man, and that is not their natural person. I mean, if you're any kind of law enforcement or judicial official,
yeah,
this all sounds insane. So there've had to be guidebooks published by judicial organizations that say, okay, this is what it is, and these are like 15,000 court cases you can use to throw these people out of court. So it's been around for a while. It comes and goes. It waxes and wanes, but it's a little more. It's a little quieter now. I think. Well, this has always been the way it is. But the real action in the sovereign citizen movement isn't necessarily people living on compounds out west. It's people with websites selling you $80 PDFs and promising you new paperwork so you don't have to pay taxes. So it really, like,
they do all the work for you.
They do all the work for you. You just write your name on the line and take it down to the courthouse. And unless the government says that they reject it, it's completely legal. Just put a notice in the paper. And if nobody sends you a letter in a month, you know, you're a sovereign citizen or whatever. So, there's still a lot of it going around. Yeah.
One of the things that Serviel keyed me into a few years ago was the whole flying the flag of Morocco thing. That's another aspect of it, but that's more like, I guess you could say, the African American version of the sovereign citizen.
The Moorish sovereign citizens, the Moorish sovereigns, is a sort of different branch. There was another sort of African-American focused one that was sort of a made up country kind of thing, or some kind of like tribe that supposedly discovered America first and had a claim on the land.
I mean, all this stuff just revolves around basically a way to get out of legal obligation by some kind of arcane understanding of the law that goes back hundreds of years, that if you understand it right, and like you say the magic words, you like unlock this esoteric aspect to the legal system.
Yep. And it really is. And so it matched thematically with the sort of sense of, you know, there is secret knowledge and, you know, if you have the knowledge, you will benefit from it. It didn't fit in as well as I thought it would, but you know, the whole, you know, 14th Amendment stuff about, you know, it created two classes of citizen and, you know, you can reject the one fake citizenship that makes you pay taxes. Yeah. It's the thing is, it's all just so, so confusing that it,
yeah.
Cause it reads like somebody read just enough of an old law book.
Yeah.
To pretend they know stuff, and then wrote down what they think sounded legal-ish.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, that like a lot of this stuff, and then in Nasara too, like depends on most people not understanding legalese.
Right.
So when they hear someone else speak what sounds legalese-ish, they're like, oh, well, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah. And like the citations of court cases, they always throw in these citations of court cases. And they don't, I mean, you look those cases up, and a lot of times they're not, you see a citation of a court case, your sort of assumption is, well, that must be the Supreme Court. And a lot of times it isn't. It's some like state Supreme Court case or circuit case from like 1904. Yeah. And they pull out one little phrase that has nothing to do with the rest of the case. And, you know, say this, see, this it's, proves that,
yeah.
that the United States government is actually a Delaware corporation. You know, it's
it's like the King James Bible or something. Like, because these are semi-technical languages, they need an intermediary to interpret it for you.
Yeah, you never see many people taking like the New International Version out of context. Like, well, that's written in pretty plain language.
Yeah, right.
But you throw some these and some thous and some words nobody uses anymore in there, and you can pretty much get away with anything.
Yeah, they need someone to explain it.
You know, the King James Version is the only one approved by the good Lord Almighty Himself.
It ain't King James. It ain't the Bible.
Jesus spoke Elizabethan English. Doesn't yes. everybody know that?
which brings me to a question though too. Before we kind of move on, is about like kind of like. You mentioned this a little bit, but like the apocalyptic imagery and the end of days kind of imagery that is kind of imbued in some of these triumphalist conspiracy theories, because it does remind you of the type of like, well, you know, Christ is going to return and we're going to have the 1,000 years of peace. And it's very utopian in nature.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it really is. And it's how the end of the world is going to be for believers. And in this case, instead of believing in Christ as the redemptive Son of God, you're believing in a law that Congress passed but can't tell anybody about. And, you know, which is a pretty flimsy thing to put your faith in, really. But it really does have these sort of millenarian overtones to it. And always the sense of you know, sort of almost, I don't know how I want to say it, almost arrogantly just being excited that you're on the winning side.
Yeah.
Because people like you have been persecuted for so long, you know, by the banks and by the government and by the coastal elites and, you know, whoever's oppressing you this day. But absolutely a sense of sort of the happy side of the end times.
Before we jump into some of these main groups, I wanted to mention how you talk about the changing environment of the academic study of conspiracy theory, and that's been, seems like, in response to Trumpism and the ascendance of conspiracy theory itself to like more of a mainstream status.
Yeah. I think one of the best books about it is by Muirhead and Rosenblum. Their book, A Lot of People Are Saying, about what they call the new conspiracism. I think at the Strange Realities Conference, I think Michael Hughes mentioned this book during his talk, which I found great, because it's one of those books I'd never heard anybody mention. You know, I'm like, did I actually read this book? Did I dream that there was a book called this and that I read it? But so. Academics studying conspiracism have moved from sort of being very I would say kind of dismissive of conspiracy theory, as, you know, it's like, well, these are the fake things that people believe because this is their, you know, socioeconomic or political attitude, and you know, they've been led astray by these things. But the Muirhead and Rosenblum book about what they call the new conspiracism is basically, they argue that conspiracy theory itself has changed and conspiracy culture has changed. And we've moved from what I sort of refer to as that sort of the image that's all over the internet of the guy with the pins and the strings and the board, you know, mm-hmm. connecting everything up, from that sort of thing. And conspiracy articles and magazines and newsletters that are information dense, that are just so packed full of information that you're like, I can't keep track of what's going on, but I'm pretty sure this person's onto something. The feeling I get when I read a book by Ken Thomas, when I read a Ken Thomas book, his JFK and UFO book, about the Maury Island thing. I read that and it's just like, I need to make a chart, because I can't keep any of this straight. So that kind of what at least people sort of my Gen X era age people sort of see as a hallmark of conspiracy theory, that sort of goes away. And the idea of proof and evidence, it takes a back seat in the new conspiracism. And the proof of something is not, you know, I've got this piece of data plugging into this piece of data, plugging into this piece of data. It's like the name of the book is, A Lot of People Are Saying. It's repetition. It's sort of the endless chorus of voices saying that Hillary is in charge of a pedophile ring in the basement of a pizza parlor or whatever. And social media has helped fuel this, because the way the algorithms work, you see more of what you express an interest in. Mm-hmm. And so I saw 5 articles that said,
yeah,
X. It's all over social media that X is real. Well, it's all over your social media because you shared that one article that one time. And so it fed you more. And now you're just inundated with things. And, you know, you think it's real. I saw 5 stories. No, you saw the same story printed by 5 different websites, all of which can probably be traced back to Russia. So, you know, it's a different thing. It's, I think they also argue that it's inherently destabilizing. It deconstructs things. Older style conspiracy theories, you know, talked about, you know, returning to the Constitution or returning to the way things were before the globalists took over. And, The new conspiracism is represented most by the QAnon type stuff is more nihilist. You know, what is our ideology? There is no fundamental ideology in some of mm-hmm. these things. It's not, you can't go back and say, well, it's a very hardcore sort of strict construction of the Constitution sort of thing. Like a lot of right-wing conspiracies were back in the day. It's just, you know, it's anti things rather than pro things, if that makes sense. So it is different, and scholars have started looking at this. I think the Muirhead and Rosenblum book is good. I think Anna Merlin's Republic of Lies is a really good sort of journalistic on the ground exploration of what these people are sort of thinking and what their thought process is as they get involved with these things. And it features Sean David Morton before he went to prison. So that was, if anybody out there knows Sean David Morton or remembers him and his predictions from the Art Bell show.
Oh yeah. Stuff.
So, just fun. The sort of scholarly framework surrounding this has been changing a bit over the last 5 years.
Yeah, just from like reading a few articles, like my academia.edu notifications on like papers about conspiracy theory are just like day in and day out, just like popping up. It's pretty crazy. But all these people who would, you know, we would think of as somewhat outsiders to the culture are just echoing the same things that pretty much all the insider veterans have been saying for the last few years.
There's a lot of that. There is one other difference in conspiracy culture is that there's bigger money behind it than ever before. And that's something that is, you know, costs money to do some of to have some of the outlets that the big conspiracy voices have, and they're making a lot of money selling stuff. And we are a long way from Bill Cooper's shortwave program or whatever conspiracy show the local Patriot group had on your cable access station back in the 80s and 90s. That's a difference. And like I said, social media has changed the way people interact with information and how information spreads. So you get your aunt on Facebook saying things and talking about topics that like a few weirdos would talk about years and years ago. And, you know, your parents' generation wouldn't have any idea what this stuff was. But now you're running into people who have been, you know, pretty vanilla people their whole lives and suddenly talking about how, I don't know, how gold is the only real currency. It's like, wait, Uncle Bill? What?
Yeah, I don't know if you heard our episode that we did at the end of the year with Dr. Future, but he talked about, and he lives very close to us here, and he talked about encountering this pastor and his wife at a Mexican restaurant close to where we live. and asked them what's on their mind. And they basically just started talking about the kids in the dungeons and basically the QAnon stuff. And, you know, these are just normal, you would say just normal people.
Just grocery line conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird. I mean, and, you know, I see people that I grew up with and we're just like sort of still friends with them, sometimes related to them. And, you know, growing up, they never had a political bone in their body except being vaguely unhappy about taxes and thinking that whoever was in charge probably wasn't doing a great job. And then suddenly they're sharing a YouTube video about the whole Wayfair conspiracy theory that, yeah, you know, when you order something from Wayfair, you know, nobody knows that stuff can't cost that much. And all their products are kids' names. And this person was like, I don't know if I believe it, but I think we should probably give this some serious thought, you know, because it seems plausible.
I think that's that insinuation you're talking about instead of like a, yeah.
It's like, you know what? This could be this sounds like something that could be true. And then, you know, since you have actual human trafficking being, you know, a serious issue, it's easy for groups to glom onto that. And if you say, I don't think there's kids in dungeons and tunnels under Central Park. So you're saying human trafficking isn't a thing then? It's like, no, I'm not saying a thing. We've got this sort of.
Well, yeah, and it makes it hard to not come across as like, as an apologist for like terrible things. And so you just shut up and don't say anything because you don't want to like look like you're trying to defend something like that.
Yeah, he's like, no, I'm talking about the nuance of the rhetoric surrounding human trafficking. At that point, nobody's paying any attention.
Yeah, it's already.
But, so it's like, yeah, it's a real problem. And then just change the subject to football or something. I don't know. It's a weird world. And it's hard to even tell people you're interested in conspiracy theories anymore, mm-hmm, because right, suddenly you're one of those people,
right?
Or you're oh, so you think it's all conspiracy theories? And it's like, yeah, you can't win. So I just say I like flying saucers. It's probably easier.
It's more neutral.
More neutral. Yeah, yeah. It's not going. Yeah, everything is. It's one of the few.
Just wait.
Just wait. I know. Oh, I know. it's going to be. It's going to be the next thing to get politicized to the point where people can't have a conversation about it.
Well, you know, look, we'll get to this, but Michael Sala is going to have his way. So, well, let's get into Nasara. And this is something that until you had mentioned it on this podcast and that you actually presented about it at our online only 2020 Strange Realities conference, little plug there. I had never heard of this. I had no idea what Nasara was. I guess that I just missed the memo on this one. So what is Nasara and the origins and what it's supposed to accomplish?
Okay. So actually I was thinking about this. I was trying to remember where I first heard about Nasara, and I can't remember ever actually learning about it. It's just like, I always sort of knew it was there. I don't know where I first found it, but Nasara is an acronym for one of two things. The acronym changes depending on who you talk to, which right? It's like one of the hallmarks of a real piece of legislation is that nobody knows its name, right? So Nasara stands for the National Economic Stabilization and Recovery Act, or the National Economic Security and Reformation Act. So this is supposedly a law that Congress passed in the mid-90s and that President Bill Clinton signed into law because a bunch of Navy SEALs forced him to, but then was instantly suppressed and the Supreme Court placed it under a gag order.
Thank God for those Navy SEALs.
You know, they're the real heroes.
Looking out for America.
That's right. That's right. Pointing.
Is that what they say? Did they actually point guns at him? Were they like, just like.
I think that the threat was implied, I think. Although the Navy SEALs don't need guns to kill Bill Clinton. Mm-hmm.
They could have done it with their bare hands. That's what you, yeah.
Rolled up newspaper. That's
right.
Which still existed in 1994. So. The 1993, 1994, something like that. So the idea behind this law and the list of things it would do would grow over the years. But what Nasara was supposed to do was to do a number of things. It would initiate peace immediately, so all wars would end. It would restore constitutional law in America, which is a vague as hell statement, right? It would remove every government official from their positions because they had all been unconstitutional. And so there would be a new start, a new government elected. So Nasara would abolish states of emergency and declare peace. And the wars in, depending on when, what version of, generally Iraq and Afghanistan, that's the generally the wars it's talking about. Wars in Iraq and Afghanistan would end immediately. Because there had been 90 years of government and banking fraud, Nasara would zero out everybody's credit card balances and all their debts would be erased. Not bad, right? There would be a new monetary system. The Federal Reserve would be abolished, so Ron Paul would be happy. And it would abolish income taxes in the U.S. and create a national sales tax on new non-essential items. So basically, it's a law that would make everything better economically and politically. And where it got its start, its origins are weird, because Nasara started off as a sort of thought experiment by an economist named Harvey Bernard. And Harvey wrote about Nasara, and basically it was a system of tax reform and tax and monetary reform. It did not promise to do any of the things. It was not a law. It was a proposal. He had it published as a book, and he sent it to members of Congress. It was a thought experiment. He actually set up a separate website to sort of compete against the Nasara website to say, I have nothing to do with Nasara. This is what Nasara really was. So it was one of those early, he snagged the .com before the Nasara people did. So that's what it is. And how it gets to this, how it sort of reaches into the consciousness is a complicated story. And it goes back to the 1990s and a guy named Clyde Hood in Mattoon, Illinois, but he's no relation to the Mattoon gasser, the mad gasser of Mattoon.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Just want to make sure nobody's saying Clyde Hood is the mad gasser of Mattoon. But he started an investment scheme called the Omega Trust in the 1990s. And basically he go around giving lectures claiming to be an international trader that can provide you, yes, you, insanely huge returns on your investments. And he wanted to use his position. He received a message from God that he was to use his position as an international trader to help all the little people, you know, get out of debt and you know, invest in his business. So you would give Hood $100. And you would get a 50-to-1 return on your money after 275 days. And at that point, you can either cash out like a sucker, or you can let it ride for another 275 days for another 50-to-1 payout.
Sounds like a Ponzi scheme.
Yes. In there were investors from every state in the country, China, and Australia. Hood and his co-conspirators brought in about $12 million from this, which is just insane. And then they said after 1995, we will have no more Omega investors. And they probably did one last round of get your money in for this last round of investing. So they closed off that one. And then he started up other programs and started employing his big investors as sort of the spokespeople for these new programs. Like, I've invested in Omega Trust and you can't, but you can, you know, you can get in on these other things. After a while, people started to wonder where the money was, and he was, you know, constantly saying, look, the money is coming. However, you know, the government changed some rules, and so we can't get the money out right now. but you know, keep waiting. And by 1999, the feds were onto him. In 2000, he and his co-conspirators were indicted on money laundering and fraud and filing false tax returns. Pled guilty, went to federal prison. He died in prison in 2012 at the age of 78. And the way this connects to Nasara is that one of his investors was a woman named Shaney Goodwin out in Washington, Washington State. And she called herself Dove of Oneness, which is dumb. I don't know. I guess I'm in a bad mood. That's dumb. She sort of took over cheerleading for the Omega Trust thing while Clyde was in jail or, you know, during his trial. And she was sending out messages saying, you know, the case against Clyde doesn't have any credibility. He's going to be acquitted soon. Stay away from any website that has information on the case because it's government propaganda. And you'll be tracked if you go to that website. So don't look at the newspapers about this case because they're using that to trap you and they're going to arrest you. So she starts.
Perfect.
She starts.
Perfect.
It is. Perfect. She starts pioneering these techniques that will be used in the future. She has high sources in the court system, high sources in the government, publicly documented events. Those aren't real. That's fake news. They are staged to make it look like something's going on. Don't listen to anybody who's telling you anything different because they are out to get you. And in 2001, she transitions to talking about Nasara. She takes Harvey Bernard's thing and sort of slices and dices it and comes up with that list of things that's going to happen that we talked about earlier. And she starts getting donations from people and does pretty well off them. She connects it to a lot of sovereign citizen stuff that happened in the 1980s, the so-called farm claims cases that were basically started off as legit court claims against the farm. I want to say Farm Bureau, but that's an insurance company.
They're like banks, right? State banks.
Federally backed banks, rural investment bank sorts of things. And there was a scammer named Roy Schwassinger who was involved in this, and Goodwin sort of repaints Schwassinger as this hero who was able to prove the truth about the government being corrupt and get Nasara passed before he went to prison, which was totally bogus, right? He shouldn't have gone to prison. They put him in prison to shut him up. And we get all of these reasons why the law was never passed. It turns out that the United States was taken to court at the World Court, and the World Court says you have to implement the Nasara law. And Bill Clinton said no, and then the Navy SEALs show up, and then it's scheduled to go into effect on September 11th, 2001. But George Bush destroyed the World Trade Center with, depending on who you talk to, orbital lasers or moon-based lasers, in order to not only to erase financial records that would have proved the existence of Nasara and the preparation to, or I get there's different stories, but I think one of the stories is that one of the computers in the World Trade Center was the key computer that would have to be switched on to initiate the financial transformation. So the World Trade Center was destroyed to prevent Nasara from taking place, and people just run with it. She sends out daily email updates. It's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Oh, didn't happen. That's because this court in this one place has made this ruling, but everybody involved has a gag order and they can't talk about it. They talk about it, they go to prison. That's why if you ask any judge about Nasara, they will deny it. If you ask your congressman about Nasara, they will deny it. If, you know, somebody said, well, why don't they ask the president at a press conference? Well, by law, he has to deny it because there's a gag order. But that doesn't mean that people aren't working behind the scenes. And so she keeps this going, bringing in loads of donations to support her mission in spreading the Nasara message. That's she never really It's a question about whether she actually defrauds anybody, because there a lot of times they weren't paying for anything other than her information about Nisara.
Well, and her audience, like, is the original audience of the people who were victims of this Ponzi scheme. It eclipses that, and then she's just promoting Nisara itself.
And they tie it, and she ties it into it by saying, when Nisara is passed, all of the Omega funds will be released.
Yeah.
Because the government's holding the Omega funds because they're evil. But once this is fully implemented, all that money you've invested will come back. So it's, you know, sort of the sunk cost fallacy. You know, I'm this far in. I've got to keep going with this. And she brings in paranormal stuff. One of the people in charge of this is one of the good guys is Saint Germain.
Hey, he's back.
He's everywhere, man. He is the immortal Frenchman who's been around since the dawn of time and or 1712. Who absolutely did not die in 1784.
He was an Atlantean.
He was ageless.
I want to jump in just real quick on that. The Saint Germain stuff, because that comes up time and time again. And when I read that in your book, I was just like surprised, but not, because, like, you know, the Saint Germain stuff that pops up. I mean, she had to have some kind of exposure to the IM movement.
Yes, I either that or as many places as Saint Germain has popped up. I think she probably could have gotten a brain full of Saint Germain, maybe without actually being aware of the origins of the whole thing.
Her name is Dove of Oneness, so I'm sure there's some New Age garbage going on there.
If you read more than like three New Age books, I mean, I don't even know what kind of. Yeah. You walk into a New Age bookstore, pick any three random books off the shelf.
Saint Germain is somewhere.
Two of them will mention Saint Germain, right? So I think that. I think that's probably, if she wasn't, you know, in the loop on Ballard, she was just deep into the New Age culture enough that it sort of sunk in.
It may have come from Elizabeth Clare Prophet.
Ah.
That's my thought on that. Because in the 70s and in the 80s, I mean, Elizabeth Clare Prophet, she grew out of the IM
right
movement. She took the classes and all that, and then she and her husband started this whole other group that also extolled Saint Germain. So there is a In Search Of episode from the 70s that is about Saint Germain, and Elizabeth Clare Prophet is interviewed in the Saint Germain. What's also interesting about Elizabeth Clare Prophet, to kind of tie this into QAnon, is General Flynn, Michael Flynn, at one of these QAnon meetings, did this prayer.
Seven rays.
That was verbatim from something Elizabeth Clare Prophet had prayed in the 1980s.
Yes, that was wild when that happened. That was, for so many different reasons. So strange that, and somewhat sinister and somewhat telling that you know, there's the New Age conspiracy, and it's like, boy, people think would be in on that, not necessarily Michael I Love Jesus Flynn.
Yeah. And Saint Germain, as by Elizabeth Clare Prophet's group, her cult, whatever, when she's interviewed in that In Search Of episode, she talks about Saint Germain being the source of human freedom and all these type of very, very kind of right-wing ideas. And I really think that this lady, she may have gotten this from Elizabeth Clare Prophet.
That makes sense to me. That really does make sense. Yeah. So the thing about Shani Goodwin is she's dead. I meant to say that in a more graceful way, but she dies. And if Nisara keeps going, even without Dove of Oneness, because other copycat Doves of Oneness, they didn't call themselves that, but I sort of do, they pop up, and suddenly there's no longer one unitary voice sort of proclaiming the gospel of Nisara. And so it splinters into a billion different strands. But the message among all these people is very similar. And one of the splinters I look at.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
That is a guy named David Robinson, who I think he's out of prison. He might be dead. He went to prison for fraud.
Imagine that. I mean, it just
he was involved in the Sovereign Citizen Movement. Published the Maine Free. He was part of the Maine Free Republic up in, unsurprisingly, Maine. And so he was selling, you know, stuff to you know, people, and he gets in on the Nisara stuff, and he starts linking it to the secret 14th Amendment and things like that. And he talks about clones. There was a clone Janet Reno. There was a clone Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin. And I'm glad there was, because it allowed me to spend a paragraph talking about Dr. Peter Beter from the 1970s and organic robotoids.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about the moon stuff, whether or not those were leased from the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds.
I want to say Rockefellers. Just because, I don't know.
Peter Beter and the Rockefeller and Rothschild space battles.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that was, it's weird how it all comes in, is Battle of the Harvest Moon and things like that. I need to do a collected edition of Peter Beter's writings. the annotated Peter Beter.
I don't know, Robert Guffey might beat you to it. I don't
shoot. So David Robinson brings in a lot of sovereign citizen stuff into this, and he expands the list of things Nisara does to like 20 things. It's crazy. He adds things like reinstates the original titles of nobility amendment, which is a sovereign citizen thing. Basically, there was an amendment that was never ratified that would basically de-citizenize any American who had a title of nobility. And it was never ratified, but they thought it was going to be ratified. This is like an 1801 or something. And so there were copies of the Constitution printed up, not by the government, but just people who printed them up that included it. And it was never ratified, but sovereign citizens claim this is it's a cover up, that it really was properly ratified. And the reason they hang on to this is because they say, well, if you look at a lawyer's stationery, what does it say?
Peter Esquire.
Esquire. Esquire is a title of nobility. Therefore, no lawyers are lawfully citizens of the United States. No judges are lawfully citizens of the United States. So, it does that. It does other things that like increases benefits for senior citizens.
Hey, there you go. Don't vote for that.
I think he's just pandering at this point. Mm-hmm. Monitors elections and prevents illegal election activities of special interest groups. releases enormous sums of money for humanitarian purposes, enables the release of 6,000 patents of suppressed technologies being withheld from the public, free energy, anti-gravity, sonic healing machines. So it just expands it to do all of these other things that actually tie into things like the UFO disclosure movement, you know, that the secret government is holding all of these alien based technologies that would make our lives better. Here it's just, I guess they're just being kept secret because the government's mean or something. But yeah, so Nisara sort of splinters into a billion pieces. There's a version of it called Gesara for global economic blah 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 instead of national. This concept called quantum finance or something like that is brought into it. This is a new money system that, you know, is, you know, transcends reality in some ways. And of course, then you get cryptocurrency people running scams. Not that cryptocurrency is a scam. I mean, I've got my Bitcoin, right? But I've got like $10. But someday that $10 is going to be $15, guys. And then I'm retiring. So it just splinters into all these different places. And you start to see some overlap between Nisara and the UFO disclosure crowd, because you have some Nisara sites saying, and Nisara will require the government to disclose what they know about the UFO, about UFOs and alien contact. So it just gets, and some Nisara interpretations, UFO disclosure gets added to the list of things that will happen once this law is acknowledged. And there's always on podcasts and YouTube videos, there's always people saying, you know, it's just around the corner, or it's happened and the mainstream press just hasn't released it yet. I saw one the other day. I think Jack Brewer sent me a link to some YouTube video the other day of some guy who claimed on his podcast or his YouTube show that that Russia had, in quotes, privately instituted Nisara. And so, or Gesara, and so it was coming very soon because Putin had privately declared that it was now in effect. My life hasn't changed much in the last few days since that happened, but my car payment still came out of the bank this morning. So apparently it hasn't fully become real, but it's still going 20 years later. And if people are interested in this, apart from buying my book, they can also, there's a documentary out there from 2010 or so called Waiting for Nisara. And it's pretty well done. It talks to some everyday people who are in so deep, they don't care how much credit card debt they're racking up. They don't care if they're behind on their mortgage, because any day now, you know, yeah, they're going to lose their house, but they're going to, Nisara, you know, we won't lose our house. Nisara will keep us from losing our house. I don't think it's streaming anywhere for free. I can't remember. There's some streaming service that has one of those $5 a month ones that's like the all documentary streaming service or something has it. But Waiting for Nisara is worth checking out.
And you make a point in the book too, Aaron, that it has really combined with QAnon now too, that there's a lot of people in the Q sphere that are advocates for Nisara as well.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that the deep state is covering up. And there were all sorts of predictions that Trump is finally going to be the president to institute Nisara. And when he wasn't able to, it was obviously the deep state, and or he has something even better coming. I think a couple of years ago, the QAnon Anonymous podcast did an episode about Nisara that was actually hilarious, but because it sort of went into some of these message boards and some of the conversations people are having, where, you know, people start to think, well, gosh, maybe there really isn't anything to this. And it's like a bucket of crabs dragging down the one that's trying to get out, you know, it's just piling on and saying, no, you know, have faith, because that's what legislation is based on, faith.
Yeah.
Right. That it's got these very religious aspects to it. Not necessarily in content, but in the fact that it is literally faith-based politics. You know, mm-hmm. you know, what's your political position? I believe there's a law that's been passed that hasn't been implemented, and when that law is passed, all of our economic problems will be over. It's not really.
Is it? I wonder if it's kind of a reflection of just people's hopelessness for real change, and you know their lack of ability they feel to make any real change, or especially economic things. And at this point, you know, just like with the people not understanding the legal system and using and the sovereign citizen type of stuff, this is people not understanding government or economics. And
yeah, I think that if Dove of Oneness had tried to sell this either a year before or 10 years after she did, I don't think it would have flown. But doing this in the depths of the post 9/11 recession was smart. And then it kept going into the housing crisis and the automotive company bailout, sort of the 2008 meltdown. And she died shortly after that. But you had this time of a deep economic uncertainty there in that first decade of the 21st century. And I think you're right, Serfiel. I think it really does reflect the sense that there are powers manipulating the economy in ways that are not to our advantage. And there is nothing we can do about it. And thankfully the white hats, the good guys, there's got to be somebody to come rescue us. And
yeah,
you know, people want somebody to rescue them. They get tired of trying to figure out a way to cope in a system that seems perpetually rigged against them. So that they want somebody to rig it the other way or undo the rigging or fix these things.
Well, that whole idea of these white hats or white knights and this, like, you know, we'd see that carried over, especially into Trumpism, and this idea of like this government in exile.
Yeah.
That is like waiting to take over.
And yeah, they're the shadow government is there doing the right thing. And, you know, you just have to have faith because they're putting the pieces in place. They are. I mean, this wasn't a phrase when Dove of Oneness was doing Nisara, but the whole, they're playing, you know, 12 dimensional chess, man. They're just so far ahead of everybody that, you know, it may look like it's the opposite, but it's not. That's just the cover.
It's so crazy. And that's something that is so much different than any period of conspiracism we've seen before.
Like, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, older conspiracy theories, it's like you could have like misreadings of legislation and misreadings of what people said, and sort of willful misreadings is like, well, what he really meant was this. But this whole, like, everything you see is a complete fabrication and the opposite is happening underneath, and it's going to be good for us. And it is very different. And it's honestly taken a lot of fun out of it.
Yeah.
It's just like, this sounds dismissive and it sounds snobbish, but I'm going to say it. It's just so dumb.
Yeah, it is.
I can't intellectually engage with the ideas in a fun way. I could do that with Bill Cooper. I could do that with any number of JFK assassination conspiracies. Now, what do we have? JFK Jr. is alive and he's going to come back and he's going to save everybody. Well, why do you think that? Well, this one guy looks like JFK Jr. It's like, what does that even mean?
Right.
Yeah. So it's everything has. It's the idiocracy version of conspiracy culture.
Yeah, it's dumbed down.
Yeah, it really is. And I sound like an old man because I am.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn. But, you know, can I just have a good old-fashioned conspiracy book that isn't a collection of websites that has been turned into a Kindle book? When I was working on the QAnon stuff, back before Amazon had its massive purge of QAnon-related materials, I got a couple QAnon books with, you know, this one has an essay by Joe M. and this one has something by Red Pill the World. And what it is it's like half the book was a transcript of a YouTube video. I was like, why do they cite just YouTube at the end? And I went, it's like, oh my God, it's the text of the book. It's a fucking YouTube. the hell did I pay $10 for?
Scholarship.
It's just ridiculous. And what's great is after Amazon purged QAnon stuff from all of their merchandise and books, the person reprinted one of these books and just like changed QAnon or Q to just the plan. And so everything else was the same. They just
get around the algorithm.
It's like Bill Cooper's version of of protocols. So replace it with the Illuminati.
I mean, replace Jews with Illuminati and spell Zion with an X. And we're all set.
He doesn't do that himself. He tells you to do that at the very beginning. Right. Yeah.
In order to keep the, whenever you see those,
Well, a couple of things I wanted to point out about specifically about Nasara is that there's a very much like a year of Jubilee aspect to this, like from the Bible. You know, it's supposed to be every seven years, so every 49 years, there's a forgiveness of debts and these type of things. But then also there's, and the UFO disclosure movement is going to do this too, there's using September 11th in that tragedy to their advantage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in a way that is deeply cynical in a way that like most 9/11 conspiracy theories aren't. Most 9/11 conspiracy theories have been, you know, this was a nefarious act in order to, you know, foment war in the Middle East or to provide an excuse to go into Afghanistan or whatever. But these pre-existing conspiracy theories like Nasara and like disclosure, it's just such a, I don't even know what I talk about in the book anymore. Stephen Greer's 9/11 thing, like if only the government had, it wasn't like they did 9/11 to cover up the UFOs. It was even more irritating. It was if the government had allowed like the CIA and you know, other, if alien technology had been widely available, we could have prevented September 11th. It's like, so it's the fault of those who did not release the, you know, because we would have had, you know, particle beam weapons that could have vaporized the plane before it hit the towers, could have sensed these things. It's just,
what an asshole.
I can't stand that guy. That's the thing. Absolutely nobody in this book I have any sort of affection for. It's like all of these people, it's just like, I hate all these people. I really just dislike every, except for Peter Beter. I dislike everybody involved. And in like,
Peter Beter's kind of tragic. I mean, in a way, he really
is. He was not a well man. But you know, in my other conspiracy theory book or the UFO books, I mean, Bill Cooper is fascinating, especially if you read the Mark Jacobson biography that came out. You know, he's got some tragic elements to him as well. He's just a deeply flawed and deeply wrong person, but he's interesting and entertaining. You know, all the JFK stuff, that's just so sort of nerdy and sort of, you just want to give the person a hug and say, look, do you just want to have a milkshake or something? Just relax. You know, you just like, aw, you know, bless their heart. You know, but this stuff, the combination of dumbness and cynicism that just floods through this. And the fact that it's all a grift.
Yeah.
It's just so,
because it's harder to do that with the apocalyptic stuff.
Exactly. What are you selling? Starving to death? You know, the best you're going to do is hopefully make a profit on the canned food you're trying to sell.
Yeah, or get people to invest in gold, but that's about it.
Yeah, this is pretty weird, but and pretty annoying. But one of the things I found interesting about Nasara is that, you know, I said it sort of splinters into multiple areas. There's also people who completely misunderstand what Nasara is, which is hilarious. And Sherry Schreiner, was one of those people who was like, Nassar is bad. Nassar, well, she didn't misunderstand it. She sort of took the view that Nassara was a demonic new age sort of cult thing. It's the financial system of the new world order, because Saint Germain, you know, it's got all these new age figures. So it must be bad.
It's the Great Reset.
Yeah. The Great Reset is, you know, it's all that stuff. And so Schreiner, you know, sort of comes out swinging against Nassara. You know, and the Prophecy Club folks, Stan Johnson and the Prophecy Club, he's just a dumb guy who doesn't understand what he's reading half the time. And he talks about it as being just like the Great Currency Reset, you know, that sort of thing. And ties it into his Bible prophecy outlook. And his Bible prophecy outlook is different than everybody else's on earth, because he's weird. If anybody out there is familiar with the Prophecy Club, you've got my sympathy. That is a rabbit hole of stupid. But oh boy, I'm grouchy. But you know, so there's all of these things that go into Nassara and by the time we get to today, it's connected to things like QAnon. There's elements that overlap with UFO disclosure, and it just becomes just a rat's nest of confusion. And I think that was one of the most difficult things about working on this book, is that in the age of the internet, everybody with a web page or a Twitter feed or a Facebook page has their own interpretation. What is Nassara? What do people believe Nassara is? Well, there is no one Nassara thing. What is QAnon? What, I mean, and especially once the Q drops stop happening, what is it? It's whatever anybody who sounds like they have some authority says it is. And it just becomes so splintered.
Well, it's becoming its own religion. I mean, it's becoming cult-like in and of itself.
Yeah.
And I mean, you mentioned the whole JFK Jr. thing. I mean, look what just happened in Dallas back in November. And as far as I know, they're still there. And like, we're waiting for the Jonestown moment to happen.
I would not be surprised if we see something like that. And it's going to be one of those things that probably the major media doesn't really know how to cover adequately. And we'll be sitting here saying, oh my gosh, well, this is, you know, this is QAnon. This all goes back to that one thing, but it'll be one of those things where they won't be wearing like QAnon t-shirts or anything. It'll be something we'll see little code phrases that'll tell us, oh, yep, it's evolved into this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's coming.
So let's talk a little bit about the UFO disclosure movement and why you included it in the book and its hopes and how it also plays on this kind of same end times kind of apocalyptic imagery and this utopianism. You spent a lot of time on Dr. Stephen Greer as well, and Boylan, who I think is much, much more entertaining
than Greer.
Hot tub dick. Yeah.
That's hop tub therapy.
That's right.
Can't go wrong with that.
You can't wear your underwear because the detergent will mess up the chemistry in my hot tub. Yeah. Wow. Can't believe that line worked. Wish I would have known that one years ago.
We're in the wrong line of work, guys. We really are.
We really are. So the UFO disclosure thing, I should probably just sort of define that, because it's such a broad term, but it sort of denotes the belief that the government knows that extraterrestrials are real, that the government is covering this up, and that the public acknowledgement or disclosure of the extraterrestrial presence on Earth will result in massive positive changes to society. As opposed to the government's not going to tell us anything because, you know, society will break down. Or if the government knows something and they tell us, you know, they're going to tell us that they've made a deal with the evil grays and, you know, they're selling our souls to the grays or something. The disclosure advocates believe that the end result of a government disclosure of UFO truth will be a sort of ascension of the Earth into the Brotherhood of Planets. Especially Richard Boylan talks, you know, there's a Galactic Federation and Earth is, you know, will be part of it once the evil governments acknowledge the truth. And he should know because he is our ambassador to the aliens, or the aliens ambassador to us. He somehow has both jobs, which I don't think is a thing. But I sort of focus on Greer and Boylan. And then I talk about Michael Sala in kind of the sort of QAnon connections section, because he sort of veered the most off into QAnon territory, but thematically it fits. You know, there is a golden age on the horizon if we get our way and the bad guys move aside and let those of us who know the truth and the white hats in government who support us, but who are being kept down by the man, you know, if they all get their way, and make things happen, it'll be good. Yeah.
We talk a little bit about Greer and some of his stuff that he does, and just his kind of dishonesty and his that he says he did this briefing with this, like, with the CIA.
It's the same kind of like self-appointed CIA authority. Yeah, and like,
right.
I love that. So Greer, he's an emergency room physician in North Carolina. He starts off with his CE5 events where, you know, you shine a light in the sky and you summon the aliens. And somebody said, I think a listener said to me once, well, how do you account for the fact that people did have UFO sightings during these events? I was like, people have UFO sightings all the time. You know, you don't have to pay Stephen Greer $5,000 to go out in the woods. You know, in fact, I prefer you don't. But, you know, so he's, you know, kind of UFO summoning events. He had programs that would, you know, help people prepare for life post-disclosure. And how do we prepare humans for a post-disclosure world? And he had connections in government, he said. He basically knew somebody who knew somebody who knew Webb Hubble, who was, if you're old as me, you remember Whitewater, Webb Hubble, one of these Arkansas lawyers who comes to the White House with Clinton and all of that. And basically through all of this, Greer claims he briefed the director of the CIA, James Woolsey. He also met with Lawrence Rockefeller. Oh my gosh, the Rockefeller family knows about UFOs. No, Lawrence Rockefeller likes flying saucers. That's about as far as it goes, which is fine. So he has a briefing at a dinner party in December of 1993. He says, I briefed the director of the CIA. No, you talked about flying saucers at a dinner party. That is not the same thing that the CIA director was at. And this gets out into the news and people start talking about it, to the point where Woolsey and his friend John Peterson, who were at the dinner party, issue a statement or mail Greer a letter saying, would you please stop telling people this was some kind of briefing? I had the quote here. You portray this dinner party conversation during which the four of us listened to your views and politely asked questions as a briefing with a cover story. None of this is accurate. You have portrayed politeness as acquiescence and questions as affirmations. Your conduct in this matter contravenes both accuracy and simple manners, which is hilarious. And then Greer, you know, responds, and you talk about good manners. Good manners would be telling us about the flying saucers. Basically, it's like you're an idiot. And so the thing is, because Woolsey denied it officially, Greer is able to say, this is part of the UFO cover.
Oh, of course.
This is what we're fighting. This is what we're up against. You know, basically, Woolsey's gaslighting us. You know, I briefed him, and now he's issuing statements that it was just a dinner party. Yeah, because all top secret briefings involved the people's wives showing up. So that was fun. And then And then, you know, he continues with this, and Greer's sort of empire expands dramatically. He's doing documentaries, the Atacama thing with the little basically genetically, you know, premature deformed human. You know, this is an alien, has alien DNA. We have to get it tested. He did a whole documentary about that. Mm-hmm. Turns out, no, it's human. And you're desecrating human remains, and, you know, please stop. So Greer is sort of, it's weird. He was the really big name for a long time. He did this briefing at the National Press Club where, you know, and the thing is, here's the thing. Anybody can do a briefing at the National Press Club. It's just a place you rent a room at. You guys could probably run Conspiranormal at the National Press Club. I don't recommend it because I like going and I don't want to go to DC. But, you know, it's Richard Hoagland would do things at the National Press Club too, and it had about the same amount of authority. So he, you know, has these witnesses come up and testify, and there's these briefing documents, and it's called.
It might be a good way to promote the new Strange Realities Conference.
The national a live briefing on the otherworldly from the National Press Club. The truth about goblins from the National Press Club.
We could have Tim Banal just like testify.
I would pay American dollars to see that. That would be outstanding. So Greer does this disclosure briefing, launches the Disclosure Project, really is the one who sort of makes the disclosure word synonymous with this mindset. He really is kind of the granddaddy of all this. And the reason why we need disclosure is because, much like with Nassara, there is technology and science and medicine available that will help us all if we only have the truth. But sadly, we don't have the truth, and, you know, people are suffering because of the lies the government is telling. But the future is there. We just have to take it, or just have to be given it by the overlords, and the white hats are no longer getting the job done.
Yeah, then we got, you know, like you talk about Michael Sala and how that's being combined with QAnon.
Oh my gosh, Michael Sala. I just need to mention this. Michael Sala, my favorite jaw-droppingest WTF moment in all of this was Michael Sala interpreting some numbers in a Q drop as corresponding to numbers in the ISP. Corresponding to digits in ISBN numbers of UFO books. You know, there's only 10 digits, pal. You know, they're going to show up in a certain order just because these three were in the ISBN of a UFO book. Yeah. Could it be that Q, a government insider, and if he does have the clearance claimed, he would have knowledge of the UFO question? So it's just all supposition. And he goes from, it may be interesting if this Q figure is a high up government official, to a couple months later, Q, a high ranking government official. He just sort of like segues almost seamlessly from, well, this might possibly be something, to this is absolutely a thing. And he interprets these different Q drops in his peculiarly UFO disclosure related way, or sorry, exopolitics related way. It's deeply troubling to see that level of overlap. Not surprising, but troubling.
Yeah, it's just another infiltration of something else. It's just another, yeah, like you said, it's just another overlap. And the UFO disclosure movement is still very, very strong. I mean, I draw parallels between the UFO disclosure movement and just like the kind of evangelical Christian prophecy community. It's always going to happen. It's always coming, and it never does. And the latest stuff, I guess, is Lou Elizondo, I guess.
Yeah. And that stuff, man, I'd never thought I would say this, but it's so boring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I will take Greer and Boylan and Sala over the Elizondo crowd any day, because what's the big massive revelation? The government has said something. You mean the government that lies all the time? The government that, you follow just say lies all the time about everything? You believe right. them now because somebody saw a Tic Tac or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was head of this office. Well, he can't confirm he was head of it, but he worked for it. Well, we can't confirm he worked for it, but he was associated with it. It's the grift, right? How much money is he bringing in for, you know, things we can't really confirm in any deep way? And I mean, you know, props to him if he's, you know, making a buck off gullible saucer people. I mean, that's the tradition, right? I mean, that's what yeah. you do. But the idea that now there's going to be an office in the Pentagon that will be looking at these things, I'm sorry. It's not groundbreaking that the military is paying attention to what's in the skies. It's not news. And nobody said this is, or when they say this is beyond our current capabilities, well, it's beyond the current capabilities, maybe, of things you acknowledge having.
Right.
You know, it's, yeah. But, you know, if you look at Twitter, if you look at the UFO Twitter hashtag, it is full of people who are treating this as almost a transcendent moment. This is when humanity finally grows up. Thank you, Lou, for bringing us the truth. And it's like, really, this isn't. It's the same thing over and over.
Yeah, I mean, how is that what they're doing any different from Blue Book, which lasted for 20 years?
Right. I mean, yeah, there was a 2-decade-long official government investigation of UFO sightings. It's like. And it led to nothing.
Well, the stuff gets a little offensive, too, because we're used to these UFO grifters. But then when it's our government and our taxes doing it, we're like, hold up. Like,
right. Wait.
If it's all these hucksters, who gives a shit? But like, no. Like,
yeah. It's like, come on. You know, aren't there like schools to fund or something? You know?
Yeah.
It's... Can we send more than 4 COVID tests to each address? You know, maybe 5 for people who might have more than 4 people in their household. But the disclosure thing, it's full of interesting characters.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and beyond the technology stuff, there is like with Boylan, there's this spiritual evolution kind of new age aspect that, by keeping the Space Brothers from us, you know, they're stopping our spiritual evolution.
Yeah, our spiritual evolution, our intellectual evolution, our mental development, and higher consciousness. You know, they're not like Boylan is much more on the sort of old school contactee
yeah.
sort of mindset. You know, the aliens aren't like us. They don't care about material acquisition of goods. They don't have racial problems we have, or the problems with war and things like that. But Boylan's a trip, man. He's hilarious. Because he starts off as sort of a run of the mill abduction hypnotist researcher back in the 90s. He was a psychologist. He had his abductees, he hypnotized, and he was one of the people saying, look, everybody who's saying that the aliens are bad, they're wrong. You know, the aliens are benevolent. They are here to help us. These are not abductions. These are close encounter experiences. You know, you're misinterpreting, or you're deliberately lying about them. He got into some trouble for inappropriate behavior with his clients, including, I mean, there was the whole hot tub thing. Hot tub therapy, but also, you know, that some of the findings were he's kind of persuaded these mostly women that they had been abducted and dragged them to UFO conventions. And, you know, that's absolutely not therapeutic for people who might be suffering from psychological conditions to go to a UFO conference and to be sort of, you know, your real problem is that you haven't fully integrated these experiences with the aliens that you've had. You know, it's just piling more issues onto them. And so he moves into UFO stuff full time after 1995, and he becomes much more focused. He can't really do any hypnotism stuff, therapy stuff anymore. So he moves into sort of the galactic diplomacy realm. And, you know,
self-appointed, of course. Yeah.
Well, he was appointed before birth by the aliens.
That's right, because he's actually an alien soul.
He's a walk-in or whatever. He does weird stuff. He talks about the Star Kids, you know, these children with alien souls, and how can you tell a Star Kid? It's stuff.
Yeah, he's really weird. I hope no one ever let him around children because he's...
Oh my gosh, no.
The weirdo.
The part where he is using a dowsing rod, sitting in like the Walmart parking lot, sort of dowsing for kids. He also went to Disneyland to see... No, Disney World. Oh, he went to... I've got it full up here. He went to... trying to find a diverse sample of with his dowsing rod.
I think he went to like a pretty rough inner city neighborhood, right?
He went to, quote, Disney World, a Walmart in a poverty area of South Sacramento, where there is a substantial mix of ethnicities, a area of Sacramento notorious for violent crime, hard drugs trafficking, and gang drive-by shootings. And he... He used dowsing rods. I assume that's not a euphemism to detect the Star Kids. He also, I think the creepiest thing is when he's talking about the spirit sexuality that Star Kids exhibit.
Yeah.
He's watching these nude teenagers playing beach volleyball. And, you know, while he was nude also, and he was pretty sure that, you know, being comfortable with nudity is one of the signs they're a Star Kid. And I'm just like, you know, it's like, this is grooming. This is like one step before, you know, Chris Hansen asks you to have a seat in the corner. You know, it just comes across as really, I'm not saying he ever did anything like that, but boy, if you're a cynical person, reading this gives you a pretty poor impression of Richard Boylan's hobbies.
I will say too, the quizzes are excellent.
Yes, I did rank very high.
Oh,
as a starseed.
So you're a starseed. That's outstanding.
One of 90 something percent of my generation, I guess, according to him too. So
yeah, well, you know, you young people are you're the future. Me, I'm no starseed because lights don't turn off when I walk in a room or blow up. And I've never been told I have an old soul. I've been told I need to grow up. I don't think I'm a starseed. But yeah, the UFO disclosure stuff is really sort of outstandingly sort of variable. It's everything from just the sort of hardcore, the government's covering stuff up, to Richard Boylan playing, you know, cosplaying as an alien ambassador. It's just all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
I mean that idea of cosplaying and alternate reality games, infinite games, I mean that's really what people are adopting with a lot of this stuff. It's really becomes a part of their identity, and it's like a lifestyle.
It really is. It becomes who they are. And if you talk to them, that's, you know, what's their personality? Their personality is they're one of those UFO people, one of those disclosure people. It's not an interest they have, like maybe ufology fans of the past. I mean, there've always been obsessive types, but when you stake your entire future as the human species on this being true, it tends to become kind of an obsessive thing.
Well, Aaron, this has been excellent. Thank you so much for coming on. This, as I said, was an excellent book. Can you tell people where to find the book and also where they can find your two great podcasts?
Okay, the book. Actually, the easiest place to get it is on Amazon. I think this one is relatively reasonably priced. So I want people to know I had nothing to do with the price. Nothing to do with me whatsoever. So, compared to one of my books that only came out in a version that was $80, I like this one a lot.
Was that the one about the old like educational films?
That one wasn't cheap either. But the $80 one was by the same publisher. It was about conspiratorial and paranormal science fiction TV.
Okay. Which,
it's a good book. I like it. It's just like only 8 people have ever read it. So, and one of those is Banal, who I gave a copy to because my luggage was overweight when we were in Canada. I just like, here, Banal, take this book. I got to get my luggage under 20 pounds or something like that. So, So Amazon is the best place to find that. Although anywhere you find books, You can get it. You can get it also from the publisher, McFarland. So you can get it from them. But and it's pretty much the same price everywhere. You can find me at saucerlife.com and greatlakeslore.com, the two podcasts I have, and I'm on Twitter at saucerlife as well. And you can find those podcasts anywhere you can find podcasts. And in about a week and a half, 2 weeks, we're going to be launching the Chizo Media Patreon. We're actually doing the Patreon thing. Ooh. So we'll see how that goes. But I've got some, Sam and I have got some fun things planned between the two shows that we're going to be offering, and things that might be too goofy for people who aren't paying customers. So we'll see what happens with that. Should be fun. New ways to interact with y'all. And yeah.
Are we going to hear more from the Saucer Wife on Saucer Life?
The Saucer Wife is insisting she be Patreon exclusive.
Okay.
she's not. But yeah, she'll be on there, and she'll be on the regular show too. Sparingly. She's like, I don't want to, I'm an attraction. I'm not like, I can't let people get too used to me. I'm just too much for them to handle. It's like, yes, dear. I understand that. Yeah, that's where I am.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Well,
thank you.
In closing here, Aaron's going to stick with us. We're going to do a little Patreon section about some of the Saucer Life stuff, but we're going to close out the show. I do want to say, guys, that it should be out by the time this episode is out. Pennyroyal season 2 is out, and
episode two
features
moi.
That's right.
Your and so Serfiel is Conspiranormal co-host.
Yeah, Serfiel is going to be in that episode, and you can tell just a little bit about what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm waxing poetic a little bit about Mr. James Shelby Downard and the mythos and characters associated with him, and got some alongside some very interesting people who I look up to a whole lot, who are some of the leading experts on James Shelby Downard lore. So thanks to Nathan and the Pennyroyal guys for including me on that. And it's quite the episode. Can't wait till it comes out and everyone else gets to hear it.
Yeah, we'll be having them on here in 2 episodes from now. But next week, we are going to be starting our own monthly episodes about conspiracy theory and about the history of conspiracy theory. And we're calling that...
working title right now. We're not working quite title. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, stay tuned for that, guys. That's going to be the next episode. And episode 400 is coming up as well. And we're going to do something special for that too. So stay tuned for all that. And Patreon, of course, is available. So Serfiel can tell you where to find that.
Patreon.com/conspiranormal. You can join the International Association of Conspiranormalists and catch one of these weekly Patreon episodes like we are about to do with Aaron. For $10 a month, you will get admission into our Strange Realities online speaker series that we're about to start having in February.
Mm-hmm. Featuring Kiki Dombrowski for the first one.
Kiki Dombrowski, and that is going to be available to the public as well. But that $10 subscription will get you in the door of all those. And for the $20 and up, you can join the ancient circle of Strange Realities, of which I have heard rumor that Aaron Golias himself here became a member of and was initiated into those ancient mysteries of the Circle of Strange Realities at the Strange Realities.
My life has never been the same.
So you guys can join in that illustrious illumination as well over at patreon.com/conspiranormal.
All right, guys, thanks for listening, and we will be back next week, as always, on Conspiranormal.
please consider becoming a Patreon at www.patreon.com/conspiranormal or leave a one-time donation at conspiranormal.com. And please check out our YouTube channel, Conspiranormal Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big.